I learned that there's a thing as wanting something too badly and trying too hard. I kept telling myself over and over to quit trying. Like, quit trying. Quit caring. Quit trying to force something that's not meant to be. And when I would try to force it, that's when bad things happened. And I was probably a little more abrasive than I needed to be around other people.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Ben Rhodes. Ben is the defending NASCAR Truck Series champion. He's been driving since he was 7 years old and is on the verge of stardom in a sport that is extremely hard to crack into. We're going to have some fun digging into his incredible journey at just age 25. You're also going to see how many parallels there are in professional driving and other pro sports to any line of business out there. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to help spread the impact we hope to have. Thank you to everyone that's out there sharing this podcast with friends and family through emails, texts, social media, whatever it may be. It's because of you that each and every week, these listener numbers are going up and growing like crazy. Enjoy. Dano's and Pabst Jerky is bringing you a spicy collaboration to deliver a southwestern punch of flavor with Dano's Chipotle Jerky. This is an all-natural, no-sugar, high-protein, and low-fat snack perfect for an active lifestyle by giving you the fuel to get through your next big adventure. Available now at PabstJerky.com.
Ben, welcome to the show, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So is Louisville still home base for you?
Louisville is home base, although I wish I was here more than I currently am. The last week, I was gone for a week straight. We came back. We're here for a couple of days. We leave again. So it's home, but not home very much throughout the summer.
Yeah, so for a race week, are you there the entire week?
No, typically. So it's funny. NASCAR's actually shortened up our schedules. Usually, you know, you would practice, qualify, the next day you'd race. So it'd be a two-day show. Depending on what time you practice and qualify, you'd come in. It could be anywhere from 2 to 4 days you'd be in that city. They've shortened it up, though. Usually we're one-day shows now. So you'll fly in the day before, race all day long, fly out the day after. But my wife and I ended up getting an RV, so we kind of are trying to slow down a little bit and enjoy our time at the track a little more now. We found the get in and get out and the hotel scene. I've done that for 8 years, 9, 10 years now, and I'm just over the hotels.
Yeah,
over it.
I get it. Yeah. I get it 100%. In broadcasting, you know, you're on the road all the time. It's a different hotel all the time. John Madden made it famous to do the RV because he didn't like flying or something. So he did the RV, the Madden bus around the country. So that's interesting. When I went to my first NASCAR race at Kentucky Speedway for the opening, it was amazing to me how quickly those guys get off the track, straight to a helicopter, a lot of those guys, or straight to their plane, and they're in Charlotte by the time we drove from the 45 minutes away or an hour away in Kentucky back to Louisville. Like, we were with Jimmy Johnson that day, and Jimmy beat us home.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. They do the airplane 500 when the race is over.
Yeah.
It's like, how quick can all these guys get to the airport? And the funny thing is most of them actually airplane pull. So I know for a fact all the race teams in Charlotte, they charter planes. So competitive teams, two competitors, they all hop on the plane together. And it doesn't matter if you got in a fight 20 minutes prior.
Right.
You have to get on the plane together and fly home.
That is wild. Yeah, you nick someone's corner, cause a pileup, and then you fly home together. Maybe there's some brawls on the planes.
Yeah, it's I think everybody's smart enough and wants to get home. I've never heard that happen, but you know, I'm not about that scene. Like, you go to Charlotte and it's lake life.
Right.
Everybody's living on Lake Norman, and it's just it's like the racing lake life scene. I don't know what else to call it. I'm not really about that. I prefer my hometown crowd, friends, family, everybody's here. So I'm flying commercial everywhere, basically, where everybody in Charlotte is flying private and chartering aircraft. The exceptions will be like certain races throughout the year. Our race team's in Ohio. If I'm up there with the team, I'll fly with the team occasionally if they're on the owner's plane.
Yeah, that's really cool. So let's dig in on your story a little bit. I want to know, you know, I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. So I want to know, I know you started racing when you were 7 is what I understand, correct?
Yeah.
Like, how do your parents say, okay, Ben, it's time to hit the road, and you're going to go compete in racing.
Well, I didn't really take to a whole lot of other things. I mean, you're built a little bigger than me,
right?
And I was built pretty small as a kid. T-ball wasn't really my thing. Soccer wasn't my thing. I really didn't get into much other than that. But every day I was home, we had a really, really long driveway. Grew up on about 5-10 acres. And I just was glued to dirt bikes and four-wheelers and go-karts the whole time. My brother and I were, you know, basically daring each other to see who could jump the four-wheelers the farthest on the ramps. So then the next day, my dad comes home with these chest protectors and helmets that we got to wear because we're, you know, freaking eating dirt. And I think the story my mom tells is when she looked out the front window and my brother was watering down the driveway and we were having a competition to see how many times we could spin the cart and keep going in the same direction. That was like, all right, we're going to go find something to do with this. And they knew people that had a cart. They sold it. My parents bought it. And it sat in the garage for like a year or two before we even made it to the track. So we had no family, no like no resources to do this. We just kind of were like, okay, here's a cart. We like to drive. Let's go try it out. And I'm glad we did.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. I'm sitting here today because of it. So
yeah, it's amazing how God will align moments like that. Like, okay, well, Ben's a good driver. Well, maybe you guys wouldn't have the means, but then you have a family friend with a cart, and so you get your in that way.
Yeah.
And I also love the fact that your dad didn't say, hey, boys, you need to be super careful. Hey, we're not going to do this anymore. He said, I'll go get helmets and chest protectors because I want my boys out there getting a little dirty, having some fun, pushing the limits.
That was it.
Yeah.
He put the ramps in. He came home with the equipment and built all the ramps and built a track up on a hill. I mean, he was pushing me to ride dirt bikes at 5 years old, 4 years old, and I didn't take after the dirt bike very well. I fell over, burned my leg, and then I was like, I'll stick to the go-karts and four-wheelers.
Right. Yeah, stay on four wheels. Yeah. So speaking of your journey on four wheels, so you're 7 years old, you're going to start this racing career. So you start in kart racing?
Karts, yeah. We started in karts. So my progression ladder was karts, Bandolero cars, Legend cars, late model stocks, ARCA for a couple starts, like two races, K&N Pro Series East, Xfinity for 10 races, and then I've been in the trucks for the past 7 or 8 years. So that's where I've been at. I made my first cup start last year, and I'm just kind of happy where I'm at in the truck series.
Yeah, I prepping for this podcast, I was unaware of that progression, like how that works in racing. And it was super interesting to me, like the one vehicles that won't accelerate super fast, so young kids aren't getting in these high-powered collisions, but it's still strategy, it's racing and all that.
It's different. Everybody has a different ladder that they progress on. So a lot of people now, it's popular to go the dirt route. I grew up doing mainly asphalt. The only dirt stuff I did was the carts. And it's funny, too, like, each ladder, like each rung on the ladder, whether it's the Legend cars or the go-karts, whatever you're doing, it teaches you something new, like a new discipline, a new craft to work on. Go-karts, for example, would be, you know, basically how to drive rough and conserve your momentum. You would go into Legend cars, and that was a Yamaha motorcycle engine, and you weighed about 1,000 pounds. And, I mean, that was high power to weight ratio for what I drove, and it was just driving the piss out of it as hard as you could drive that thing the faster you were going to go. And it's like each rung had a different focus that you had to learn.
That's really cool. When you're that age and you're racing, I understand you're going to miss a ton of school. How difficult was that?
Not fun, not easy. So the most school that I missed for sure was Legend Car Racing. That was when I was 13, 14 years old. So I was going from eighth grade into high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wanted to go to Trinity here in town. And that's where my brother went. And we talked to him. They're like, we'll just have a couple of excused absences. We're like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm going to be gone a lot. So come time to choose a high school, I went to Holy Cross. And they worked with me a lot. I was gone a whole lot. Typically every Thursday or Friday. Around certain parts of the year. So like 2 or 3 months in a row, I'd miss like every Thursday, Friday. And it wasn't easy, but I'm thankful for it. If a school wouldn't work with me, I don't know what I would have done. Probably homeschool
quit.
Or something.
Yeah, just
of
quit.
Some sort. Yeah, honestly, if yeah. I could, I would.
I know it. I mean, how much do you really learn in high school that translates to the rest of life anyways? And you're out there chasing a dream.
Thank you. Yeah. I talk about that all the time. Like, if I could run a school, the things that I would teach in that school versus what you're actually being taught. I haven't used the Pythagorean theorem once.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is anymore.
Okay, thank you. That's it. That reinforces the point.
All right, I want to know. So let's talk about just kind of big picture racing. Like, what separates the best from the rest of the pack? Because there's people competing from all over the world to come and compete in racing. What separates the best?
That's kind of a tough question. It's loaded. The funny thing I've noticed over my years of doing it is you have people that have natural ability and talent for it. You have people that are okay, but through experience get a lot better. And then you have some people that just don't belong out there. So you have that range. You have a full range. And everybody's progressing and getting better. Just because you have more talent than somebody else doesn't mean they're not going to outwork you or, you know, they're not going to have better opportunities that outshine you. So the big thing for me where I'm at in my career right now is hands down the crew that's behind me.
Mm.
It's my crew chief, most importantly, and then it's the people that he's working with on that team building these trucks. I always say now that the races are won in the race shop. So what are they doing there? Are they minimizing mistakes? Are they putting everything together correctly where nothing's going to break or fail? And then, you know, on top of that, my crew chief has to have the right setup. So you have... I could get a whiteboard out and I could show all these different parts and what they mean on the car or the truck and what they affect for you and how they feel. So a track bar change, I know what that's going to do. Right side versus left side, truck arms, skew, yaw on the rear end. You have preload. You've got front sway bar. You got asymmetry. You've got Ackerman. You've got camber, caster. You've got all these things that you have to know. And a crew chief that understands what I need as a driver, that can read my lips, hear what I'm saying, and understand what that really means, and then act on it. That's so important. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think that the crew chief is one of the more fundamental pieces of a team. I've worked with a lot over the years, and the ones that understand big picture, something that's comfortable, something that's fast, most of these crew chiefs go out there and they're trying to chase the unicorn. They want the thing that's going to lap the whole field.
Right.
And they go after that every weekend. And guess what? You might hit it once out of 100 times. But those other 99 races, which is about 3 years, 4 years of our schedules, you suck.
Right.
So having a crew chief that understands common sense, give me something that's top five. Give me something that's comfortable. Let me do the rest of the work.
Man, I love that. I love you recognizing him as well and understanding that it's all about the team. And that's any sport. And even though that's an individual sport, golf is an individual sport, but there's a team behind each golfer. There's a team behind each tennis player. Mm-hmm. Racing's an individual sport for the most part. You know, you may have teammates out of the track in alignments, whatever.
We don't talk about our teammates.
Yeah, exactly. But your team is so valuable behind
Very
you.
Much.
But I want to know a little bit about like the important skill set that would separate a great driver from someone who, you know, just thinks they can do it. But I would imagine there has to be a certain amount of focus, hand-eye coordination, communication skills to be able to communicate back to the tower. Am I on the right track there?
No, I think you are. Actually, it's funny you say that. 2 days ago, I was having this conversation with my crew chief because he used to try to be a driver. He wanted to be a driver, and somebody asked him, they said, why did racing not work out for you? What made you want to be a crew chief? He says, well, when I talk to most people, most good drivers, they say the sport slows down for them.
Mm.
He says, every time I got into the car, whatever I was racing, my hair was on fire and everything sped up. And I think it's important to be able to have the ability to process what's happening. You got to be able to think ahead. You know, you look at like hockey, right? And you talk about like Gretzky and everybody talks about how he was able to see what was going to happen before it actually mm-hmm. did. Like he knew where to be and he would let it come to him. I think the best drivers for racecraft know that they're going to do this move and this person's going to react this way, and it sets everything up in motion and they're always a step ahead of everybody else. Now, I mean, that's great for racing around one another, but that's not single truck speed, right? You've got two elements to this. You've got the racecraft, which some people are amazing at. Then you've got the ability to just raw natural speed that some people are great at. And it's marrying those two together to become a good racer. And I mean, it's always a work in progress. I feel like I got the raw speed. I really had to work on my racecraft over the years. The thing that has changed my career 100% the last couple of years has been the ability to race smarter and more big picture around people. It's really easy to just let that chin strap just cut off all the circulation right here and just completely, you know, throw your brain out the window. And that was me not too long ago.
Yeah.
I've loosened the chin strap up a little bit. I can see things a little more clear now.
Is that how you developed a little bit of that bad guy reputation, kind of racing without that foresight?
Yeah, probably. And some of it wasn't intentional. It really wasn't. But I think back to so many different mistakes that I've made. They keep me up at night for sure. And I think, okay, if I would have done this different at this time this year, how would my career look right now? And I'm bad about looking back at that stuff. So I'm really making it a point now going forward that every single thing I do, I take that weight that I carry with me and allow that to help make my decisions. I don't want to be like that anymore. I don't want to have mistakes. Every single track that I go to this year, the number one goal is to eliminate mistakes. You know, the number two goal is running the top five, blah, 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 blah. But if you do that, you eliminate your mistakes, you can run in the top five, you're going to win races. It takes care of itself. And, you know, maybe in the past I allowed that pressure to get to me and I wanted it. I learned that there's a thing as wanting something too badly and trying too hard. I kept telling myself over and over to quit trying, like quit trying, quit caring. Quit trying to force something that's not meant to be. And when I would try to force it, that's when bad things happened. And I was probably a little more abrasive than I needed to be around other people.
Yeah, man, that makes a lot of sense. And when you're competitive and you're born to compete like you are, sometimes it's hard to shut that off. And then not beating yourself up over past mistakes, now letting them fuel you and say, okay, I'm going to eliminate that. And eliminating mistakes, for everyone listening out there, like that's – not repeating mistakes. We talked about that all the time in the NFL. Like, if you want to get to be a better player, eliminate mistakes, and then over time, it's a gradual progression, and then that success comes. But if you beat yourself up over, you think it's going to happen overnight, it's truly not going to happen. For someone that was born with ADD, I would love to know this. How hard is it to focus for an entire race? Because, man, any lapse in focus can result in catastrophe.
No, that's actually really funny you asked that. I think about that a lot. I think I have ADD. I've just been undiagnosed. My wife has it for sure, and I might be worse than her sometimes, actually.
Yeah.
So here's a perfect example. The last race I was at was Bristol Dirt Race, and that was one of the most focused races I'd been a part of in a while. So you're going down the straightaway and actually make the turn and be fast. I was driving at a higher level than I usually would have to be, and like hitting my marks, it was so difficult and so taxing that over time, you know, I just started getting like I had to blink and start remembering my breathing properly and trying to almost bring myself back to earth a little bit. I got so like tunnel visioned on what I was doing that I felt a mistake coming. I don't know. It's very hard to explain unless you experience it. I'm sure in other sports there's parallels to that, and we all experience it differently. But it's tough. The focus is 100% one of the most important things in racing. The biggest factors that take your focus away is, number one, the speed. But the heat is insanely hard to deal with. And breathing, for me, has been something I've really tried to focus on here lately.
That's interesting. What's your pre-race routine look like?
I wish I had one.
Yeah, well, we got to develop one. Come on.
I wish I had one. You know, people ask this, and I'm really bad at routines. I'll have to ask Wiley X for some new sunglasses.
Yeah.
I'm really bad at routines. I'm terrible at them. And our problem is we go to each racetrack and it's just a completely different schedule every single race and every single year. It doesn't matter if we go to that track again a year later. It's a different schedule. I've never been able to get into a good routine. Mainly, I just try to make sure that my last meal is eaten 2 to 3 hours before the race, and that when I am hydrating, I've kind of got a feel of, okay, this is the last point you need to go to the bathroom. Like, you need to, I mean, we all know once you're stuck in that thing,
right,
and you've got to go, you either go on yourself or you're not at all. And so far, racing trucks, I have not had to do that yet.
That was going to be my next question.
Keyword, racing trucks.
Yeah, so I heard Scott Hansen talk about this, and he does the NFL Red Zone. So on Sundays, he works the entire day, and he's calling. So the NFL Red Zone channel, they have 10 different games going at 1 o'clock on Sunday, and he's covering them all, and they're bouncing back in between games. Well, he takes pride into never taking a break. They never go to commercial either. So he does the entire 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock games without taking a break, and he talks about how he trains himself to not use the restroom, and he eats foods that are saltier beforehand to kind of absorb more water and keep him hydrated, but then not have to use the restroom. Are you doing any kind of those techniques?
Yeah, keeping your electrolytes right for racing is important. I did a few different things in the past that kind of helped me determine what I was losing, what I needed to replace. But if I have to go, I'm not going to sit here and say that I wouldn't, because that would be a huge distraction. I think it would be a danger thing too. Like,
right.
You think about this giant balloon full of liquid. If you get in a wreck, the wrecks, NASCAR has a terrible habit, and they do it for a reason, but they have a terrible habit of the first race of the year, Daytona. They all bring everybody into a room, and we watch these videos on new safety equipment they're developing. And they show you all these wrecks that they simulate that should be like death. And so you think about that. You watch the bodies of these dummies move, and then they'll show you replays of slow motions of wrecks that we're in and the G's that you pull. I'm like, I've never been in that situation where I've had to go, but if I did, it would be on the top of my mind of what happened if I wrecked and then it ruptured. Any sort of, it ruptured your bladder or something.
Yeah.
What would that do to you? Random thoughts.
Yeah.
This is probably not what you've talked about on the podcast before. But
I love it. I love it. This is right up my wheelhouse. I one of my favorite things in life is learning about processes and what makes people in any walk of life great. What brings them to the top of their sport, craft, profession, whatever it may be. And so I'm absolutely loving this. And when you brought up the Rex, do you ever think let me phrase this better, because I'm sure you can never go into a race worrying about crashing or worrying about what would happen, but is that really hard on your wife? I know for me, playing in the NFL, much different. We're not going almost 200 miles an hour, but my wife, she would always say in the stands, every time I'd hit the ground, she'd be like, please get up, please get up. Mm-hmm. Does your wife worry in those situations?
I don't know. I really try not to ask her about
it.
It's funny, the sport of NASCAR and just racing in general used to be from where it was just extremely deadly to they made, improvements where then it would become broken bones and, concussions and different things, to now it's either you break your back or your sternum or you get really bad concussions or nothing happens, and you, again, knock on wood, whatever, there hasn't been a death in NASCAR since Earnhardt died, if I remember correctly. So they've done a really, really good job on safety. But the key talking point nowadays, the temperature in the NASCAR world, is we've almost made things too safe in the sense of everything's almost too rigid. So what's absorbing the energy, right? What's dissipating the energy? What's absorbing it? The cars and trucks in general, it just seems like they keep adding more and more bars, different things to, you watch a flip happen and the roll cage comes in and it gets this close to the driver's head. Well, we got to add more bars. We've got to add more things. What happened if the roll cage came 6 inches further? He would have been crushed. So at what point do you say we're making it too stiff? Because everything that doesn't get absorbed by the wall or dissipated by the truck breaking apart, that's going to your body. So the biggest thing nowadays that I think a lot of drivers are fighting with is concussions. And it's not like in the racing world that you can get them I don't know how it is in other sports, but in the racing world, you can't get them diagnosed. Or, maybe Cup, or if you're some driver that's got this great contract. If you're in the truck series, you're in Xfinity, for the most part, you're going to go undiagnosed. And if you get diagnosed, you might have just put yourself out of a job. So you just do what you have to do and focus on your own health. And you sit in the basement for a couple of weeks with the hoodie and sunglasses on, and you hope that the next race is a 2 or 3 weeks away.
Wow.
But I don't know. It's safety's improved, but there's a whole temperature range right now on what do you do. And NASCAR is developing that new Cup car, and that was a whole contingent, point for them. So It's a hot topic, I think, nowadays.
It definitely is. It's across the country. It's youth sports. It was made famous in the NFL. The movie Concussion came out and brought a ton of light to it. And it's amazing because, you know, nowadays they're saying, okay, maybe we were wrong sitting in a dark room. Maybe you should go out and exercise and get more blood flow going. Maybe we should do these things. Maybe we should do that. Ultimately, we don't truly know what the best solution is. But, man, that's scary when the concussions are occurring. And I never even consider that. Like my one fear hopping into a car like that would be a big collision and you die, but there's so much wear and tear, I'm sure that happens along the way.
I think the biggest fear for most drivers is just fire, you know, but again, I never really thought about any of this. I just kind of get in and you go as hard as you can, and you know, you just love
it. You can't think about it.
Well, that's the thing. I'm sure anybody that loves what they do, if you go that way, if you were to pass away that way, well, there's a lot worse ways to pass away. At least I'm doing what I love, and I probably had a smile on my face when it was happening, right?
Right.
So I've never really thought about it. The fire thing, you hear drivers talk about it that have been involved and that have been burnt. That's a little worrisome. Like, I really don't want to get burnt and then be like that the rest of my life. But for the most part, you just kind of go. The concussions I have thought about a little bit, you know. I mean, my main focus is not hitting the wall.
Right.
Used to be when I was younger, I didn't hit the wall enough. And, you know, if you wreck, you wreck. At least I went for it. Now it's like, I'll think twice about that. You just start feeling your brain. You feel your brain hit the front of your skull and you're like,
yeah, that didn't feel good.
Stars and,
right?
Yeah, it's not good.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we used to say, like, hey, were you concussed? No, I was just seeing stars. Well, now they're saying that was a concussion as well.
Yeah.
And so at the end of my career, they're like, well, you know, you do this exit physical from the NFL, and then they clear you, or, you know, you get disability. And like, well, how many concussions do you think you had? And I'm like, are we considering just, like, getting a little blurry, seeing stars, a concussion? I was like, there's no way of even telling you because, I mean, I was getting hit 70, 80 times a practice, 80-something times a game, and I've been playing football since I was 9 years old. So I'm not sure. I've had a bunch, I'm sure. But through neuroplasticity, I've had Dr. Daniel Amen, the top brain doctor in the country, on the podcast. I did 6 months of a protocol with him. We did scans on my brain, and there was noticeable changes within even just 6 months. And so I've continued that protocol over the last 3 years. So do what you're doing in your sport. Definitely don't think about it pre-race or else you're going to be timid and all that. But there is ways to heal your brain. And now they're finding out. They used to just think, like, once you damage your brain, it's done forever. Well, now they're figuring out that even through your 90s, you can heal your brain.
Really?
And so there is hope out there. And
that's incredible.
Yeah. And that information and that knowledge is becoming more and more widespread, which is excellent. And maybe all that talk about the concussions in the NFL, which at the time,
that's where it all started.
Yep. And so that led so many scientists and brilliant people to dig in on it.
I mean, from the time I started racing in NASCAR, it was never even a thing. It was never even a thing. They never talked about it. And now, in the last few years, it's become this big deal. You have to have these impact tests. You have to do this concussion protocol before the races and after the races. And, you know, that was, I mean, a few years ago, it didn't exist. And I think it all kind of stemmed from your all sport.
Yeah, that's cool. Who would you consider to be the best of all time in your sport?
Oh, man.
Or who are your favorite drivers and the ones you look up to?
So, well, that's multifaceted. I look at a lot of different disciplines. You know, obviously the big names that everybody knows is Earnhardt and Petty, and Jimmy Johnson won those 7 championships here not long ago.
You want to know what Jimmy Johnson's pre-race routine was?
What was that?
He eats the same thing every week, and it was like baked chicken and something else, similar to what you were saying, like you got to eat something that you know you're not going to use the restroom and have to, you know, get some stomach issues. So he'd eat the same thing every week, and then he'd sit in his RV and watch Wedding Crashers.
What?
And it was just like his way of downloading and chilling out for a little bit, not thinking about anything, because he's like, man, I got to focus for the next, you know, 3 hours or 2.5 hours or whatever the time frame was, because it's like the second you get in the car, you're locked in and focused. And we were talking with him a little bit throughout the day, and we went to the driver's meeting with him, and then afterwards he was like, hey, I just need to go in my RV, like, I don't even want to really be talking because I need to save all of my focus for this race.
Yeah, see, I find that similar in a lot of ways. It's weird when you're at the track and you just want to get time to yourself. People get, like, offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no. I've got a job to do. I've actually become more blunt about it in recent years, where you know, if I need my own time, I just tell people to get lost at the time. Like,
yep.
You know what? If you're mad at me, you go be mad. This is my job. This is the job I have to do here in a little bit, the reason I'm here. And, you know, in the past, people would want to be, like, right there all the time. And it's like, we need space.
Right.
So one thing that I think NASCAR in particular is, I think, is very fan-oriented, and the fans have a lot of access, but there's also this double-edged sword of, well, how are you supposed to perform when you're, you know, you have all these people just, like,
right,
you know, coming at you.
Sure, we're hanging out in the pits.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like, what in the world? So I've been very grateful for the past few years that I've had some pretty low-key sponsors that don't really bother you too much on race day. You kind of can stay focused, do your thing. My crew knows, you know, if I'm doing this and that, to leave me alone. But when you get up to the truck and the crowd is there and everybody wants pictures around the truck, and you're like, just leave me alone, people.
Yeah.
I would actually try to be the first one to get in the truck just so people would, like, not bother me, but they'd still come up to the window. I'm putting my belts on. I'm putting my safety equipment on. Like, leave me alone.
Right. And there's a balance between, okay, we understand that we could make someone's day,
yeah,
like a fan. You don't want to take yourself too serious, but the reason that you want to get a picture with me is because I perform well at my craft, and I'm not going to be able to do that. And the fans ultimately buy the tickets and pay the bills.
Yeah.
So there's that, like, balance. But, you know, a lot of guys, you know, for a 1 o'clock football game, we got to spend the night at the hotel the night before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of guys will go home for breakfast and chill out and then go to the stadium if we have a home game. Well, I never did that. And, you know, my wife would be like, oh, like early on, like, oh, you're not going to come home? Well, I saw so-and-so came home and they're hanging out. I'm like, well, we have people in town and they're here to party and I got to go. I'm going to battle today, and I always am weary about using the word battle or whatever, but ultimately I got to go get in a fight for 3.5 hours,
yeah,
plus the warm up and everything else. Like, I don't need any distraction right now.
I appreciate that 100%. I really do, and it's weird how some people feel. I've always been timid around other people. Like, if it's not, I know my place. Like, if I reversed roles, I would feel awkward putting myself out,
yes,
there in some situations. And some people just come out of nowhere, and I'm putting my helmet on. They'll just come right. I'm like, who are you? Like,
right?
You know, space. Or you have a terrible day, right? Like, let's say I made some huge mistake. I took myself out and a bunch of other people. I get out. Maybe I just got in a fight with somebody. I don't know. But I start walking. Hey, man, you got time for an autograph? Did you watch the race, man?
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't have time. And then you're the worst guy in the world, right? Because,
yep,
you didn't stop and sign something. And but I think context is important for a lot of fans, and, you know, the ability to process when you're in those moments is difficult. And I find it that alone time is necessary, but it seems to get harder and harder for me the older I get. Like, the less, like, my bullshit meter,
right?
It's my ability to process. It's getting worse and worse.
Oh, I guarantee it. And when there's only 40 of you guys or 36 of you guys are all the star of the show, you know.
Yeah, like,
and
go bother somebody else.
Yeah. I
it's
get,
bad to say.
No.
It is.
But it's real. And, you know, there are so many great athletes that people would say are pricks. Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan. Kobe Bryant. Like, people think those guys are pricks, but they're selfish. They're selfish of their time. They are completely committed, mm-hmm, to one thing at a time, and the best focus on less. And you know what? They're not that concerned with your opinion. And I am the opposite. I'm always worried about, like, if I let someone down.
I am the same way.
Yeah, did I say something stupid? And I'm thinking about it right before bedtime and all that. Well, I honestly wish I had a little bit more of that in me.
I've been working on that.
Yeah.
That's why my meter's getting...
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you making time for me today. I appreciate you making time for me.
Oh, come on.
What's up, y'all? Eric Wood here, and you're invited to the launch party of Dano's Seasoning's newest product, Dano's Chipotle Jerky, a collaboration with Pabst Jerky. Join us May 25th, 6 to 10 p.m. at Third Turn Oldham Gardens for a night of food, live music, and a damn good time. The first 500 people will receive one free bag of Dano's Jerky. I hope to see you there.
So you win the 2021 NASCAR Truck Series Championship. How rewarding was that to have all that hard work? I mean, that's 17 years of racing leading up to that point. And I got to watch on YouTube, and go check it out. You did a remarkable job at the award ceremony. I thought that was incredible. I love the toast to the gentleman that had passed that was part of your team. But what did that mean? How rewarding was that to you?
It's a big moment in my life for sure. Validation for one, right? To know that you can do it and that the work that you put in means something. But now I just feel like I can breathe easier. I've got this like weight off of my shoulders that I've been carrying around. You know, I think the term that people use is everybody talks about how stuff just starts getting heavy and it weighs them down and it's getting harder to move and harder to move. And you just feel like every step you make, are you really making the right step? And now that validation's kind of allowed me this year to kind of be more aggressive and make moves on the track that I hadn't made before or maybe was scared to make. I'm just seeing things more clear now. And I started seeing them a little bit better last year. My crew has allowed me to do that with the trucks that they give me. But I can't even really put into words. People ask it, and I can't put it into words. But I can tell you it was one of the most incredible feelings of my life. Just pure elation, just pure happiness. Like, if I won again this year, I'm going to be really happy. But it's not going to beat that first time.
It's not going to be you up drinking Bud Lights on the podium?
I don't know. I've got a plan in place. Nice. We were ill-prepared. Here's how this went. They took us, when we won, out to this party barn that they just built where they sold all these like 700 armbands. So you got 700 people crammed in this thing with an open bar and a DJ, and they take you out there and they're like, all right, go have a good time. I'm still in my, you know, sweaty, disgusting suit, soaked in water.
Haven't eaten in hours. You're dehydrated.
Absolutely. And you have fans just right and left handing you drinks and throwing beers at you and stuff. So I'm chugging them. I'm having a great time. I wasn't going to stop. I mean, I just had like half a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
So I was – and I'm a lightweight too. I'm the first one to admit it. I am a lightweight.
Well, you're not a big dude either.
I'm not. No, I'm a lightweight for one. I'm not a big dude. And then I was dehydrated and hadn't eaten in hours. So it was a bad combo. They took us from there after like 30 minutes of just chugging, just slamming them over to some sterile environment, and you're like, what just happened?
Right.
These people aren't as fun as the other crowd.
Yeah.
So I was ill prepared. I'll tell you what, this year, if you know what, any year actually, I came up with this idea of where we're going to have a glass case. It says break in case of championship. It's going to have holster in there, a whole bunch of shot glasses, and our favorite tequila. Boom. You put that belt on. Everybody's having some fun. Well, I'm going to make sure everybody's feeling it.
Yeah.
They got to feel as good as me.
That's incredible. What's your favorite tequila?
Ooh, that's rough. I know like Casamigos is what everybody's talking about now. Terramana's pretty good. I don't have a real favorite. I like Cabo Wabo. I'm kind of just drink a little bit of everything.
After this, have you ever tried Clase Azul?
Yes, I have, actually.
Okay, that's my favorite spirit. You got to see my bourbon collection.
Yeah, that's a
part of my bourbon collection
actually.
You know, we might have 1,000 bottles of bourbon down here. But I'm tequila over bourbon, and that's like blasphemy in this state. I hope
you know
someone doesn't come barging down where we're recording this right now. But
you like what you like.
I know it.
I like a good tequila, too. I mean, it's hard to beat. It really is.
I know. For me, that's been my favorite. Yeah, so go check out the YouTube video of you afterwards, after winning the championship as well. But the reason I like that is because you're showing you're having fun, you're showing personality, and you should enjoy that moment. And you know what? We were talking a little bit before we started recording, like that made you more personable to the fans, and that kind of got you out of the bad guy, you know, motive that everyone had created, this personality that they created for you, and then that you got to peel back this kid from Louisville who's out here chasing his dream, just won a championship. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm pretty, I keep to myself a lot on race weekends, right? So, you know, I'm not usually the one that's going to get up there and do that stuff, but they gave me a reason that night. I had a perfectly good reason. We let at it.
That's cool. Have you heard the stories about the guys that'll have some cocktails maybe the night before, a couple nights before a big race, and they'll race go-karts and do all that?
So, well, there's a lot of stories and racing about what some of the old school guys did.
Yeah.
So have you ever heard of Dick Trickle?
Yeah.
Okay, so Dick Trickle, don't know what his real name was, actually.
Heck of a name.
Yeah, don't know what his first name really was. Maybe it was Richard. I don't know. I should know that. Dick Trickle's a legend. I mean, he's won more short track races in America than any other guy. He was an incredible driver. His rule was basically for every 100 laps of a race, that's how many hours of sleep he needed Oh my gosh. If I remember the story correctly. So he actually had a cigarette lighter in the car. So under cautions, he would light the cigarette up and take a few puffs and throw it out.
He's like the John Daly of racing.
He was something, yeah. So the funny story with him goes is he wasn't supposed to. Everybody thought he was like a big drinker, partier. The story goes is that whenever he would have one drink and he would sip on it and he'd keep making people think he's having more and more. He'd get everybody else drunk and he would take their wives home.
Wow.
That was the story.
Wow.
So you hear about the legends of the sport and the things they did back in the day. I mean, Tim Richmond, Dick Trickle, there was a lot of interesting characters that you hear about and you're just like,
I'd imagine so, because to have the personality to go race at that speed and go put it on the line every single week, you're probably going to push the limits in other areas of life as well. Like, you're probably just not a choir boy, and then you're like, you know what, now it's time to turn it on.
Most of them burnt the candle from both ends.
Yeah.
They really did. And whether it was because they were partying like Tim Richmond or, you know, have this, you know, mythical, like, you know, aura about them like Dick Trickle did, where everybody just kind of, you know, had these rumors and who knows what's true, right?
I know.
But back then it just seemed like all these people went so hard. The amount of races that were on their schedule, and it was a different life for sure. Different
right.
than, you know, modern NASCAR, 100%.
Absolutely. Couple more. Got some recurring questions. We'll get you out of here. What's your favorite track to race at?
Ooh, I don't have favorites. I don't know if you can tell or not, but every question you ask me about a favorite, I really don't have a favorite.
Yeah.
I don't even have a favorite color. No favorite foods. I don't have favorites. I just kind of enjoy a lot of – I enjoy variety.
Yeah,
so,
I like that.
Dirt racing is fun. Basically, anywhere that we have a fast truck, I really enjoy it.
Right.
I mean, that's just plain and simple. Like, wherever we win, that's one of my favorites.
It's funny you say that, because oftentimes people ask me, like, what was your favorite NFL stadium to play in besides Buffalo? And I'll, like, think back to, like, wins we had, and that'll make it special.
Yeah.
Like, the places that fans love to go to are often really rowdy atmospheres, which make it a lot harder on the opposing team. With the Bills, we didn't win a ton of those games in, like, big rowdy. You know, mm-hmm. we played in the longest playoff drought in all of professional sports. So we lost a lot of games, especially my first 8 years in the league. And so people would be like, what's your favorite place? I'm like, well, Lambeau was cool, and it's, like, real nostalgic and all that. But the Packers smoked us every time we played there. And then, you know, you kind of go, like, for me, going back home to Cincinnati, I didn't know if you'd say Kentucky Speedway, because going back home to Cincinnati was always cool to go play the Bengals.
That was, I mean, when we had Kentucky Speedway, it was cool, right? And that was kind of like my default
right.
answer for everybody. But I like road courses. I like racing on dirt. I like short tracks. I like the variety. You know, if it was, they say variety is the spice of life, right? So I don't have favorites really on anything.
When you said road course, it reminded me so a while back, my wife, I like to go fast.
Hey, we got that
yeah.
common.
Well, my wife bought me the Richard Petty Experience,
yeah.
and I just haven't cashed it in yet. But a buddy of mine brought me to Putnam Park. Have you
oh,
been
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
And we brought a Porsche GT and a souped up Mercedes, which was way too heavy. And then he had a really tiny Miata that was by far the fastest and just tore up the track. But it was a ton of fun, man. And like for me, you know, we started gambling on fastest lap times. And when you're talking about like how wearing it can be to like hit your marks and stuff, so I had to have a driver with me, a coach for the first part of the day, which was really cool. He was like a professional.
And he was trying to tell you like what
yeah.
what marks you need to aim for. And
but like if I missed a mark early on a lap, since we were just gambling on single laps, he would be like, shut it down. Like
yeah.
just cruise through the rest, because you can't mentally lock in. You know, he's like, for you, you're not used to this. You're not going to be able to mentally lock in to go 60 miles an hour around this corner, 180 miles an hour down the straightaway, and like
perfection.
You're just, yeah,
if you miss one mark here, forget. It's like running late to something. You can't really make the time back up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can only really lose time at that point. You can only really hurt yourself. I mean, we're gonna try. I mean, there's plenty of times where I make a mistake. I miss a mark on like turn one, and like turn 10, you've got to make it up somehow. You can, but perfection is tough. It's every lap is a search of perfection, really,
right.
on how to hit it just right.
And you guys are operating on milliseconds to try and, over time, you
yeah.
know, shave milliseconds, and then throughout a race that propels you to the front.
And the big thing is really, you know, saving your equipment. You know, going fast and going hard is one thing, but then trying to save the equipment as you go. So brakes, You know, fluid, calipers, rotors, all of that. And then you look at, you know, the tires. That's the single biggest thing, is how to save your tires over the run, not abusing them. I mean, you want to make a move on somebody and you go a little bit harder into the corner, half a mile prior, and you just abused your tires, you overslipped them, whatever the case is, you know that cost you on the backside. You're just borrowing. You're borrowing at this point. And, you know, I think that's another skill or craft that people try to work on, that it's difficult. It takes time. I was learning that when I was 14, 15, 16. That was when I really had to focus on that. And I feel like I honed that craft pretty well now, and we do okay with it. But there's plenty of other stuff I struggled with.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Man, this, I've been honestly fascinated with this entire podcast so far. All right. Some recurring questions. Do you have a favorite book?
Man, the favorites.
Sorry. What's a book what's a book you like, Ben?
Man, I don't read, man. I'm from Kentucky. I don't know. What's a good book? I'm more of a podcast guy.
Okay, what's your favorite podcast?
Again, I'm looking at me being mainstream. Joe Rogan Experience, I guess.
Yeah.
And only because he's got certain guests that I listen to. I know he's got like 2,000 episodes now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's certain guests that he brings on that I'll listen to. Then other guests, I'm like, who's this clown?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to listen to it. That one, there's...
What's Next with Eric Wood.
Yeah. Well, it's my other favorite podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I'm not a big book guy. The Bible, is that fair to say?
Okay.
That's my favorite book.
My next question
there
is...
There we go. I'm getting points.
My next question is, what role does your faith play in your life?
It's been a struggle for me, honestly. I guess everybody's faith is a struggle in some sense. I feel like I'm on a roller coaster with that. So I'm on track to be a father here in a few months.
Congrats.
So I'm trying to make it an even bigger point in my life. I know that's important, and I'm trying to spend more time going to church. I'm trying to spend more time with my wife, making sure that, you know, we try to say prayer together or do something. But am I good at it? No, I'm terrible at keeping up with everything, but I at least know that I want to keep that a focus in my life. I do feel like there is some sort of calm and, refreshing, you know, demeanor that comes about me when I do participate in that stuff. But as far as faith goes, it's been a roller coaster for me. Like, I've worked on it. 2017, I remember specifically 2017, I had this coin that I kept with me that was blessed by the Pope. It was St. Michael coin that I actually kept with me. I had it in my pocket for every race, and, you know, different little things that I kept with me that I thought would help protect me. And, you know, I guess I'm not good at answering that, but it's been tough.
No, I appreciate the realness of that answer.
I try to make it an aspect in my life, but I really struggle with it. I do. And I've got perfect examples where things have happened in my life that I say, that shouldn't have happened. Like,
it's a God wink.
Yeah, like, you know, the coincidences, like the math for something like this to happen in my life, it doesn't make sense. Like, this is something that's happened from above, and I try to rationalize it like a human being does, and to me, I find that answer. But trying to keep that as a focus in my life and say, you remember these things have happened, you remember these experiences, so, you know, make sure you're keeping the faith. And that's been tough for me.
Yeah, that piece that you talked about, that's real. You know, and when you're committed, it'll come back to you.
I try.
I promise.
Yeah, you know what's funny
and
is,
I love your intentionality, recognizing that, man, I want my son to come into a household that has an aspect of faith to it.
Yeah, he deserves it, I think. And for me to be like, I feel like that if I don't do that, I would be failing him as a father, right? So I think he deserves it. I had that as a kid, and I think it set a great foundation for me. And, you know, whatever I'm failing on now of going to church and keeping that faith included in my family, I need to rectify that before my child gets here. So, yeah, I think that's important. I found actually a lot of reason and a lot of like motivation to go to church actually from my teammate, Johnny Sauter. Now, he will cuss like a sailor and he will get in many fights as anything, but you look at him and he's like, we'd be fighting. A year later, we're at this track. He's like, hey man, you want to go to church with me? And we'll go like the day of the race. And it's like, you know,
God will put people in your life when you need him like that.
Yeah, and I found that very interesting because he's like not the guy. If you ask any fan, most fans hate Johnny Sauter, which is weird because he's just a very abrasive guy. He goes out there to do his job. Like we talked about, he doesn't put up with other people's stuff.
Right.
And he's just there for business, and that's how he handles it. But then you get away from it, and he's like, hey, man, you want to go to church with me or hang out or whatever? And he's a really cool dude. He just keeps to himself, and I found that influential in my life.
Good deal. Good deal. This is an easy one. What was your first car? Maybe it's not easy because you probably got it when you were like 8.
Yeah, the first one I bought myself was actually a 1971 Volkswagen Beetle.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was working on it. Drove it around for a little bit and tore it apart. Just absolutely gutted the thing, and was building it out custom, and it turned into a fairly long project. So here's the thing that I learned with cars is when you want to build your own car, it may be a pride thing. Like you can say, I built this with my own hands, but you also need to know that you're going to lose money, like 100%. And you can go buy what you want out there right now that somebody else has took the hit on without putting any of the work. You know, you can go get exactly what you want that somebody else has taken a hit on, and you put in none of the work. You don't have to do anything. And you might not have the pride that you built it with your own hands, but I'll tell you what, it feels better knowing that you have it instantaneously. I worked on that car. Oh, I worked on it until it was just a thorn in my side, and I got pretty close to finishing it. I actually got to one point where I said, okay, this supersedes my skill set, and I started asking around to people that I know that had rebuilt these, and nobody wanted a part of it, and so I got to a crossroads of, okay, what do? I sell it the way it is, or do I try to find somebody that's going to charge a fortune for this car, and you know, you're spending three times what it's actually going to be worth?
Right.
I was like, I don't have the time. We've got a family that's getting started. So actually here not long ago, I just sold the thing. But that was my first car, actually. I drove it for a little while, and I wanted to lower it. I actually built it out with this custom air ride where you could press a button, and you would articulate the suspension and pull like a three-wheel. You look like Cheech and Chong in the thing, honestly. Sitting down here, and it was pretty
hilarious.
Neat. It was pretty neat. But the work that needed to be done, I didn't finish it.
You say that you can't make money off them, and I don't know if they've sold any of them, but I'm getting these targeted Instagram ads lately for these rebuilt Broncos, and I would love one. And I'm looking at them, and I was like, wow, you know, it was just killer.
Yeah.
So I click on it. It was like $250,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certain cars appreciate. Some do. The Volkswagens, though, I mean, they've got a cult following, but not what you have to put in them. They sell for nothing, and you got to put a lot of cash.
Well, it's a bunch of hippies, and they're not out there grinding for paychecks, so they're not going to pay top dollar.
Cheech and Chong, isn't it?
Oh, that's funny. Do you drive fast on regular roads?
Oh man, cruise control is my best friend. No,
right.
I don't drive fast. I don't at all. I'm an excellent driver, and insurance companies love me, and they actually use my data to say this is what a safe, responsible driver that does 5 under the speed limit looks like.
Right.
Yeah, that's
hilarious. I know how hard it is when you're like cruising off of a road trip and you were driving like 90, how hard it is to then just go on normal roads. I cannot imagine if I was driving almost 200 miles an hour and then I'm trying to drive on normal roads.
So my thing isn't the keeping the speed so much as the other people on the road just annoy me so bad. You know, it's like,
yeah, you're used to professionals.
Most people, and the people I race against annoy the heck out of me. I don't even like the people I race against driving on the track with them, but when you're on the road, nobody has any ability or experience of what it means to drive, actually. They let the vehicle drive them. Like, you watch a crash video, and so many people just drive right into a crash. You're like, what? And, like, everything I've done in my life has been 100% about the speed and efficiency at which you do it. You are cutting thousands of a second off of every single thing that we do. And then you get on the road, and you got people that are texting and not doing this and that, and, like, everything I do is about efficiency, and it just kills me. I mean, I'm sorry, Grandma, and even the young people, I mean, they don't know how to, oh, gosh.
Right.
I try to equate it to somebody that's, like, at the top of their craft, and then they just have to deal with, like, an average person on it. It's like, oh, it's just so frustrating. It just makes you want to – it'd be like me trying to pass a football to you. I suck at anything else in life. I'm not even saying I'm good at racing, but I can promise you, any sport, I suck at. I am terrible. It's embarrassing how bad I am at it. But if you had to put up with me trying to throw a football to you, you would just be pissed off.
Well, we're going to have a long drive contest on my golf simulator after this. So I better win this
guarantee
one.
Guarantee you're going to win.
Good. Because I need the confidence boost. My golf game's been terrible lately. All right, last one for me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for Ben Rhodes? What's coming down the line for you?
Well, I'm hoping just another championship. I know that's a boring answer, but
no, that's awesome.
Everything I put into this, it's just my soul. It's my sole purpose right now. I know that our next couple of races, we go into an eight race stretch, which is kind of unheard of in our series. For the most part, our races are pretty well spaced out. We run a lot leaner group of people than the Cup guys do. They are factories. We are a factory with everything's hand-built and everything is, you know, it's not in the volume that some of those other people have. So 8 weeks in a row is a really big deal for us. So we're staying 100% focused on that. Simulator time, film, ELAP, which is kind of like a thing that our engineers do. There's a lot of stuff going off behind the scenes that we're trying to stay really focused on right now. So what's next for me? Every 2 weeks I'm in Sandusky, Ohio. Every 2 weeks I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then every week I'm in another place. So I'm just trying to balance all that at the moment.
Well, man, enjoy this ride. This is a special time in your life. You have a big-time fan of me now.
Thank you.
I can't wait to watch your races with my kids. They'll be into it. They're about to bug the crap out of you after this. And my little boy's in the car. So if he's not too shy after this, he is going to pick your brain. But, man, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy schedule, this busy time of life, to sit with here, to pour into me, pour into the listeners. We're going to have to do this again because I am so fascinated by the way you're wired and the sport you're in and the parallels between that and business and other sports. It's fascinating to me. So thanks again for your time.
Some point we'll get on a track together.
Let's
that would
do
be
it.
Fun.
That you would work me, which maybe I'll need it after I work you in golf.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.